Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. We are discussing Alzheimer's disease. This is part two of my two-part series on Alzheimer's disease. If you missed part one, you can listen to it in podcast form by going to WVOMFM.com. You can find it there. There are thousands of people caregiving for loved ones with Alzheimer's, and we're going to discuss that today and some of the programming that the Alzheimer's Association can offer. My guests are Amy Angelo. She was with us on part one and is sticking around, program manager for the Alzheimer's Association, the main chapter. And I'm very excited that Carol Douglas is here. She is caring for her husband who is living with Alzheimer's disease. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Amy, the statistics are staggering. In Maine, there are 46,000 people caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's and providing 69 million hours of unpaid care. Is that right?
That is correct. I know it is. It is quite the statistic. There are 29,000 people in Maine living with Alzheimer's currently. Yeah, and it is. It's very difficult.
It says the projection is only going to increase. Can you address that and how fast this may happen? And is there anything that we can do to maybe slow the progression of that?
Sure. Yes, we know that the it's projected to grow in the next several years. By several thousand. I'd have to have the statistic in front of me.
I'm sure.
I do not currently. However, you can actually do a lot to assist your brain health. And that is why the Alzheimer's Association, the main chapter currently, is trying to bring as much awareness to mild cognitive impairment and an early diagnosis to as many people as we possibly can.
I actually found that number, an estimated number of residents living with Alzheimer's in 2025. So that's 3 years from now, 35,000. So that's gone up 6,000 or a 20.7% increase, which is on the sheet. I didn't make that up. That's a lot. So, Carol, you are actively caregiving now. Would you share your story? When did you start caregiving, and what was that like when you first found out that your husband had Alzheimer's?
I suspected in 2014 his memory was not what it used to be. So I went with him to his primary care doctor and asked if he could be referred to a geriatrician. And we went, he did immediately. He thought my husband, you know, presented well and was fine, but living with someone, you notice changes, forgetting their medication and having trouble filling out forms at the doctor's office. So the geriatrician was very thorough in a social worker testing, and they checked levels of B12, I think it was, a B vitamin. They did a CAT scan, a urinalysis. They did all kinds of things and came to the conclusion that my suspicions were correct, that he had mild cognitive impairment. And because I worked in a college library as a librarian, I was constantly researching as well. And all their advice was exercise brings, you know, there's so many ways to slow it down. Exercise brings blood flow to the brain, eating well, drinking fluids, socialization, keeping busy. So that was kind of a slow progression till about 2016 when he went to see a neurologist and was prescribed Aricept. And the neurologist said it was MCI with early dementia, possibly Alzheimer's. And at that point, we were living in Massachusetts in the same home for 52 years since we were married, and decided to move to Scarborough, Maine to be near our daughter. So we moved into a retirement community, and it was the best thing we ever did. Very, very difficult. But so he's been seeing a geriatrician and a neurologist regularly, as well as his primary care doctor.
How was it for you when you heard that diagnosis? What went through your mind?
As I say, I was already aware of it, but I think everybody, it's like fear of the future and loss of your past life. And I've come over these years, it's been 8 years now, to he's living in the present moment. And that's what I have to try to do. In other words, we have memories. I have memories of a wonderful 58 years of marriage now, but traveling and, you know, and he has no memory of anything of those years. So anyway, it's the, you can't go back to the past. And you can't worry about the future. You have to. I said to him the other day, it's really hard getting old, isn't it? I put it that way instead of losing a memory. And because I just turned 80 last month and he's 84. So he said, it is, but we're doing okay and we'll float along. We'll keep floating along.
Oh, that's great.
I thought that was lovely. So, yeah, the big thing is routine, consistency. We went to the gym this morning. We joined a gym right after we got here because we had been going to one because of that exercise. And that's really important to have physical activity. And we walk. We'll walk this afternoon around our neighborhood. So try to do that.
That you know now you wish you had known then when it first started that you're doing now that you wish you'd known in the beginning?
I think the living, the daily life, that's been good. The financial part, I wished I had moved sooner on. It wasn't till I had knee surgery. Right, 2017. Then I had another one, 2020, and that made me realize, oh, this doesn't go well. I need to get everything in place. We had the regular wills and all that, but we went to an elder lawyer, and I can't stress that enough. To go to an elder lawyer and to get all the advice you can. And instead of having my husband as my power of attorney and my health advocate, I had to change that to my daughter's. I should have done that earlier. But that's probably the only thing.
Amy, what do you think about that piece of it?
I can't stress the importance of planning anymore, because I think I mentioned on the first part of the show that we have free educational programming that's available virtually right now. And you could listen to all of our Common Core programs, education programs, pre-recorded or live with questions and answers. But we have one specific program. It used to be called legal and financial. Now I believe it's called money management, and it's specific for the caregiver and how to go about planning for future needs. And again, the early diagnosis helps with having that person's voice involved in the planning. Mm. right? The person with the disease. If you get the diagnosis early enough, then you could start learning and arm yourself with the resources and, you know, take our education programs, learn about effective communication strategies, learn what to do about, you know, planning for future needs, financial, physical, et cetera. So that's available on our website as well.
We are going to take a break. The number to call again is 1-800-272-3900 to get the Alzheimer's Association helpline. When we come back, I want to talk about the doctor visit, because Carol, you said something I thought was very, very interesting. You said that he presented well at the doctor thought he was fine, but you knew as his wife, you knew in your heart. So I want to talk about doing that extra push. And just because the doctor thinks he's fine at that snapshot in time, it may not be. Stay with us. We will be right back with Carol Douglas and Amy Angelo. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Amy Angelo, Alzheimer's Association, and Carol Douglas, who is actively currently caregiving for her husband who has Alzheimer's. Carol, you said something in the first segment that really struck me. You said when you were at the doctor thought that your husband was fine because he presented so well in the appointment, which wouldn't be unusual. It's a snapshot in time. But you knew in your heart that things were not right. What did you do to get that referral? Some doctors can be resistant to doing a referral or listening to the wife, especially if they're of a certain age. What did you do to make that happen?
I have actually printed something which was similar to the 20 questions that they give you, and I showed him my test and my husband's, and I could see there a little some problem, but we have the same primary care doctor and he was fine. He totally went along with it. But I must say the neurologist here, every up until a year or two ago, he has continued to say he has MCI because he's intelligent, my husband, and affable and pleasant, and he's got a great sense of humor. So the neurologist was always complimenting him and saying, you're doing great. And the geriatrician is a little bit better because my daughter is able to go with me to those, and she is able to back me up with, the geriatrician will speak to us separately because you don't want to say, you know, not pleasant things in front of your husband. So you can be honest with the geriatrician alone. She'll speak to both of us, and then she'll go back with David and then speak to all of us together. And she eventually took his license away. So based on what my daughter said, nobody will drive with my father except my mother. So she was a great advocate for that. So
that must have been challenging to navigate taking the keys away.
That was probably the worst thing that ever happened to him, and to me too, because he always drove everywhere and he was a better driver than I am. And we never went in the car together without him driving, but he didn't remember where anything was. And I had to tell
him. As in locations? Remember as in locations or things like where the brake pedal was?
No. He could still drive well.
Yeah.
You know, he could still keep on the, he still drove well. But if I tried to tell him to take a left because he didn't know where we were going, he'd say, wait till I get up there. By then it's too late. You haven't changed lanes. a lot of logic and rational thinking. Yeah. Not a good thing.
So, Amy, do you recommend that people who have that knowledge, they know in their hearts, that they do the test and take it to show the primary care provider that this is what's happening more than just this hour-long visit?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's such a good idea.
It really is. I mentioned before the Know the 10 Signs program that we offer. We also have a worksheet that goes along with that to help caregivers and families and loved ones kind of go through, well, what exactly am I seeing? Is this a new change? And you could document on the sheet the changes that you're seeing, and you could bring that then to the doctor's visit with you.
And help convince them. Some doctors, I think, are really great about it, and others just may be a little resistant if they're not presenting in a certain way. But the loved ones are the ones that know. They know what's really going on deep down.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my father had dementia and, Alzheimer's, and everybody was in denial, including our doctor. You know, like, it was, he's fine, he's slow, forgetful. And I'm like, having worked in the field, you know, knowing the signs and, you know, what's happening, no, actually, this is more than just, you know, forgetting people's names or things from time to time. This is significant.
Do you find that part of the challenge, that physicians are so quick to be in denial themselves, and so that maybe prevents someone getting earlier treatment?
Hard to say. You know, I can't speak for all the physicians or everybody's experience. Sure. But that's why, I mean, it is very important to document what you see, to keep track of the changes and don't dismiss them. You know, take it to your primary, then see a specialist, then see a geriatrician. You know, we always want people to get checked out and get thorough evaluations for an accurate
and diagnosis. Early.
Yeah.
Going to the doctor early.
Absolutely.
Because as we spoke, if you want to hear the show we did prior, log on to WVOMFM.com. It is in podcast early detection. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will talk more about this and some of the outstanding programs that the Alzheimer's Association has to offer. And you can get those at ALZ.org. Stay with us. There's more to come. Hi, we're back with the Alzheimer's Association and Carol Douglas, a hands-on caregiver for her husband. Amy, when we left, I said we would discuss the programs that the Alzheimer's Association has. They are numerous and they are excellent. So can you explain some of the things that people can get by logging on to ALZ.org, and including support groups, which I think Carol had mentioned during the break?
Absolutely. Yeah, that we have all kinds of information on our website, which is alz.org/main. We have a quick links section. And in there, we have a link that says support groups. And you could see when all of our 19 support groups currently in Maine meet. And we are doing a hybrid model for our support groups. We have some during the pandemic that went, they all went virtual. And now some are choosing to stay virtual just because we've been able to reach people that we haven't been able to reach, you know, before in some of the more rural areas. So, hybrid model support groups, you could find a day and time that works for you and your schedule. We have educational programs, also an educational program link. All of our programs are free. All of our services are free always to our constituents. But all the education programs, from Know the 10 Warning Signs of Dementia and Alzheimer's to having those dementia conversations with a loved one. When is the right time to have that conversation? Well, sooner than later, right? And, you know, having those conversations about legal financial decisions and money management, effective communication strategies. And we have one called Understanding Alzheimer's and Dementia, which, you know, a lot of us don't really know the difference and what those terms actually mean. We have a program that explains that. We have a Living Well series, early, middle, late stages for people with the diagnosis. And that said, we also have one of our support groups is a support group that Carol has been attending called Living Well After Diagnosis. And I don't know if, you know, Carol, you want to say something about that group.
What has that meant to you, Carol, to be part of a support group? I know you joined that later, you said, during the break.
Yes. I wished I had joined a support group earlier, but I'm glad I joined this. I only did it because it said Living Well, and that's my goal. We've lived well all our lives, and I wanted to keep that up, keep active, keep going to museums and and doing things to stimulate both of us. And also because it was a couple-centered group, it was the caregiver and the person that has early or whatever, middle dementia. So I wanted to hear the voices of other people that had dementia and how they were coping and what they were doing, because you never hear. My husband isn't articulate about, he just, it's okay, we're doing fine, and doesn't want to discuss it. But there were men there, like Bob O'Keefe, who was active in Alzheimer's for years, and he was able, and other men in the group, to talk more about it. And plus, I can't leave him alone. So the fact that we both could go together was fantastic. I really appreciated it.
Yeah, it's so
we've been on Zoom and off Zoom and back and forth, and it's all been good.
Yeah, Carol, I am sure you can attest to this, how important it is to really form a network of support around you. And so you could do that through the support groups. And that's one of the things we also say, when you do get a diagnosis, share it with those around you so that they could offer support. And that, you know, it's sometimes there's a stigma with the disease, and we're trying really hard just to break that stigma, because it's not something you could see, you know, it's not a visual diagnosis. It's something that you experience. And, there are people all around, their neighbors, you know, God forbid there was a wandering situation, right? Your neighbors, if they know what's happening, they could, you know, step in and intervene. And we've had several situations where that was the case. So share it with those people around you. And in fact, the Alzheimer's Association has cards that for your caregiver, for the person with the diagnosis, little wallet-sized cards, like business cards, that has the helpline number on one side. And on the other side, say you're at a bank or you're at a grocery store or something, you could hand this card to the person helping you. And it says, you know, please be patient, my companion has memory issues, or, please forgive me, I have a memory impairment. And you could share that, you know, with your network. So that they know how to support you.
And that would make a huge difference. And I think it also could potentially eventually alleviate some of the stigma. We are just about out of time. Amy Angelo, Alzheimer's Association. Carol Douglas, I cannot thank you enough for sharing your story. It is enlightening, and I really appreciate it and wish you all the best. The website, again, is alz.org. Log on, check out all that programming that Amy talked about. It's extensive and very helpful. And the number is 800-272-3900. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thanks so much for listening.